How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Everybody, welcome to the latest Reigning Jays podcast. I'm John Corrales, along with my partner, the other Jay, Jay King, after an interesting week for the Boston Celtics, a loss to Orlando, and then wins over Miami and Sacramento, and a very tight, a very revealing game against the San Antonio Spurs. Jay, what do you make of this week in Celtics Nation?
They're just the Celtics. They can beat anyone. They can lose to anyone. They can look great. They can look awful sometimes in the same game. They're very up and down right now. I think they'll start to get some consistency. I do feel like they're starting to become more steady. But as soon as I think that, they might start getting wild again.
Of course, because that's how it goes.
Yep. But yeah, they're fun. They're still not. They're right now not in the Eastern Conference playoff race, which Eastern Conference is crazy right now. There's 10 teams within, I think it's 2.5 games.
Yeah,
and just nuts, top to bottom.
And so they would be in the playoffs in the West. So in a weird twist, teams in the East would be in the playoffs in the West, as opposed to what's been going on over the past few years, which just goes to show that everything is cyclical, and all of the overreaction about seeding the playoffs and blah, blah, blah is just crap, because eventually each conference goes through its dominant phase.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call the East dominant yet, but maybe soon.
Look, it's on the upswing. And if things happen, like if Kevin Durant goes to, say, the Washington Wizards and goes home, that significantly swings the balance of power. You sign a couple of free agents in the East from the West, and things change. I'm not saying this is the beginning of a shift, but it could be the beginning of a shift. So this is why I'm hesitant, and this is why I'm hesitant to have things like lottery reform that's an overreaction to Philadelphia, or playoff seeding that's an overreaction to a period of time where the West was dominant, because the East used to be dominant, and the East could potentially, as things move forward, be dominant again. So I don't think people should overreact to the microcosm of current NBA. Just kind of let things play out. It's all going to work, man.
Yes, let it play out. The East is much better now. Let's start with the Celtics.
Yeah, of course.
We've got David Lee, who is now hurt, bruised right heel. He's complaining about minutes a little bit and saying he wants 20, 25 minutes a game. Right now he's playing 15. Do you think he deserves it?
No, not at all. This is a no-brainer question to me. No. I've been on this show actively advocating for his minutes to go away, and I think this brings us to last night's game very nicely. Jay Crowder and Jonas Jerebko, time at the four. Now, you, Jay King, have been very vocal about the struggles for Jonas Jerebko, about him playing the three versus him playing the four. Jerebko playing the three, he's just the guy, basically he's the guy that was in Detroit, who plays at the end of the bench, really a fringe NBA guy. Jerebko at the four kind of changes the aspect of things. He can beat other fours and play much better against other fours and much more effective in a lineup where he's the four and Olynyk is the five. And then Jay Crowder says he loves playing the four. He likes defending fours. He likes going up offensively against fours. Yet here's David Lee, who thinks he demands time, and he's not a five. He's no way going to defend any fives. So what's he going to do? Are we going to put him out there at the four and take away from effective lineups where Crowder and Jarebko are at the top of plus-minus lineups, three-man, four-man lineups, and David Lee is not at the top of any of those lineups? So you tell me. I don't think David Lee deserves any of those minutes. I don't even think David Lee should be on this team. I'll just throw it out there. I don't even think from day one I questioned his fit. And yes, I can see him being a good passer. I can see him having some positive effect on the offense. But in the long run, what's the point of David Lee on the Boston Celtics?
Yeah. In the short run, what's the point of David Lee on the Boston Celtics?
I don't see it.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the stats of his pairings with everybody else on the roster, and it's incredible how much better the team is without him. Right now, the Celtics are getting outscored by 3.2 points per 100 possessions with him on the court, which is far worse than anybody else's net rating on the team. And about 10 points worse than they are with him on the bench. Now, that's the difference between like an Eastern Conference almost contender and a lottery team. That's a huge, huge difference whenever he's on the court, off the court. You look at players he's playing with, Evan Turner, basically everybody but Isaiah Thomas, their net ratings plummet when they play with Lee. It's just clear that he's not having a positive impact on the team. And I am with you. Like, he's still a pretty good finisher. He's still a good passer. He's still, the other night, he guarded DeMarcus Cousins, like, shockingly well. But.
Yeah, but.
But at the same time, the thing that Brad Stevens has always stressed is, how does a guy fit with other players on the team? And David Lee is not fitting with everybody else on the team. He's making everybody worse right now. And it's been clear since basically day one that he's done that. And it hasn't changed 20 games into the season. Jay Crowder, Jonas Jerebko, those guys are really good at four. I think when Marcus Smart comes back, I think you'll really start to see Stevens go small more often. He's been talking a lot about how the limited backcourt depth has kind of hindered him and kept him away from that. But he does want to use those lineups more often. He knows how effective those lineups are. So he's just kind of waiting for Smart to come back, for Hunter to establish himself in minutes. Poor Hunter. He got hurt in a 3-on-3 game after practice.
Today?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. What happened?
Like, they were just playing a 3-on-3 game. It looked like he just came up lame. He was just running. There wasn't any contact, but it didn't look too bad. He limped off the court. Looked like he put some ice on it. It didn't look too bad, but still, like, that's a tough hit after he played well, I thought, against San Antonio.
Right. Well,
and he's a guy, if he starts to play minutes, he's another guy who can allow them the flexibility to play more small lineups. And I think once they play more small lineups, Lee has to be the one who loses minutes, right? It can't be Olynyk.
No.
Can't be Amir Johnson. Right. Can't be Solinger. It has to be Lee.
Has to be Lee. Derek Lee is the guy.
It's David Lee. Let's call him Derek Lee.
Did I say Derek Lee? Oh, it's been a long day. I've been watching the Patriots get demolished.
Yeah, I didn't even watch. I was following on Twitter, and everyone was just complaining about how ridiculous the game was.
It's been bad. David Lee is the guy. Call him whatever you want. Call him Derek Rose. Doesn't matter. He's out. Yeah, I don't think he's the right fit anymore. And you know what? I never thought he was the right fit. And in Brad Stevens' offense, when you sit there and you talk about the quote-unquote pace and space, he was never going to be the space guy. And to be a pace guy, you got to play defense and dictate the pace. And he's not going to defend anybody. We've seen him get torched time and time again. So for him to come out and say he deserves 20 to 25 minutes.
To be fair, I'm not sure he said he deserves it, He said he'd like 20 to 25 minutes. So you could go either way with that. He said it's nothing against the other big guys. He thinks they're all worthy, whatever. I don't know. He's just a veteran who thinks he should play. All those guys think they should play.
Let's look at this for what it is. Lee left the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors won the championship. And he immediately asked for a trade. Like, the champagne was still wet on the t-shirts, and he asked for a trade because he's, how old is he, in his 30s?
32.
This is his last real chance at a decent contract. He was never going to get any minutes on the Warriors. If he stayed in Golden State, he was going to be the same guy on the bench, just kind of wasting away. So he decided that he wanted to go to a team where he can play big minutes and maybe pump up his value and get another big contract before he had to play out his days or just retire. And the Boston Celtics seemed to present that scenario. But then they went out and signed Amir Johnson, and they still had Sullinger, and they still have Olynyk, and they never really minimized those other guys. And he accepted the trade, not that he had much choice, but he publicly accepted the trade so he could come to Boston and say the right things and get those minutes and play a big role and get his next contract. There's nothing you could tell me that will convince me otherwise that he came to Boston because they were not a good team and he would get big minutes and he would get his contract and then just whatever happens after that happens. And now his minutes have gone down. They're down to less than 15. And he wants those 25 minutes a game to prove that he can contribute to a winner, whether it's in Boston or whether he gets traded. He just wants those minutes to prove that he is somewhat effective and he deserves as much money as he can get in the next contract. And he can be effective into his mid-30s, and then whatever. He can go waste away after 35 and be whatever. But he's out for a contract. And I don't blame him. I'm not mad at him for that. You should be out for a contract. This is your livelihood. This is a job. But that's what Derek Lee wants. He's not here to help the Celtics. He's not here to help the offense. He's here to get a contract and to make as much money as he can before he has to retire and go do something else to make money. I would do the same thing. If somebody told me you could be in a situation to maximize your earning power and make a few extra million dollars, I would do the same thing. But let's not get it twisted, copyright Russell Westbrook. David Lee is here to do whatever he can to earn his next contract. That is his number one priority. It's not the Celtics. It's not winning. It's not his teammates. He will do what he can do to be nice and to play nice, but his priority is David Lee and getting as much money as he can in that next contract. Done.
Strong, strong words from John Corrales. I love it when you get grumpy, man. When you get grumpy, you just come out firing. I love it. I got to get you grumpy more often, so that you can make up names. Derek Lee. You during that rant, you said Derek Lee again. I don't know whether that was ironic.
Why do I say Derek Lee?
Yeah.
God.
I don't know.
It doesn't make any sense.
It wasn't that an old baseball player, like a home run hitter for the Cubs?
Maybe.
I think it was.
Maybe I just don't give him the respect of calling him by his own name.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe I just dislike him so much. Maybe I will just start calling people I don't like by other names. So it's like Eric Turner and Derek Lee.
There it is. Eric Turner and David Lee.
Let's talk about a guy who's actually good, and Avery Bradley, who I will call by his own name.
He's earned his own name. He has definitely earned his own name.
Has been playing exceptionally well. Exceptionally well. And he is still streaky. He is still a streaky player, but he has shown the propensity for scoring and playing playing defense. He's a legit two-way player. So the question, two questions. One, is this more than just a hot streak? And two, a question that has been posed on Twitter. If Avery Bradley continues to do this, is he in some kind of all-star discussion?
I don't think he's in the all-star discussion. I think the Celtics would have to get really hot for him to do that because, let's be honest, I mean, he's not a great playmaker. What he does is he scores and he defends. And
yeah, that's for the all first he does. He just scores and defends. That's all.
For the first time in his life, he is scoring efficiently, like really efficiently, and scoring a lot. So that's fantastic. But when you only score 16 and a half points a game, and you don't add much playmaking, it's tough to make the All-Star team. I think he's been very, very good. I mean, he's shooting 44% from threes, and I do think this is more than just a hot streak. I don't know whether he'll sustain quite this level for the entire season, but it feels like more than a hot streak, doesn't it?
He is just.
It looks like the game has just slowed down for him. Whereas he used to rush things, he used to fire mid-range jumpers that pissed off everybody. Now he doesn't do that anymore. He's making much smarter plays. He's taking more threes than ever, which is a good thing. And he's knocking shots down. And he's doing, like, against San Antonio, he was doing it with Kawhi Leonard guarding him. Like, yeah. Kawhi Leonard, the defensive player of the year. And he, I mean, he's just been really, really good ever since he came back from that injury.
Yeah.
And I don't think it is. I mean, he's improved every year. I will give this to him. As much as people say, you know, Avery Bradley, people wanted to say that Avery Bradley is peaked because there are things he doesn't do well. He's gotten better every year, and he's taken the next step this year. I doubt he'll stay at 44% shooting all year, but he's been really good, and his defense has been fantastic.
It's been amazing. He's been a really good defender, a top-notch defender. And look, I mean, yes, he's streaky, but I think he gets streaky in a weird way because he just disappears on offense. And it's not that he misses a ton of shots. He just all of a sudden stops taking shots, which is weird. And I guess I need to go back and look at some of those performances to see if maybe defenses are especially keying on him. But he has, when he's not scoring, it's very often that he's just not even taking those shots. And I think, I don't know if he's taking a step back. It'll be really interesting to see how he does when Smart comes back. Because I really think at this point that it's going to be Smart and Isaiah Thomas as your starters moving forward. Everybody healthy? I mean, what's the sense that you get, Jay? I feel like it's going to be Smart and Thomas as your starting backcourt, and now Bradley's going to go to the bench.
Yeah, I have no clue there because that's what it seemed like they were going to do when Smart was healthy. Now, who knows? Like, Avery Bradley has played so well with the starting group, and so I don't know. It probably makes sense to have either him or Isaiah come off the bench because Smart is probably more durable than either of those two guys, and he can play more minutes. Not durable because he's kind of been injury prone. But as far as playing more minutes, I think because he's more versatile, that they'll have him play more minutes than those guys. So I don't know. Probably Avery off the bench. Either way works, and especially if you go to more small lineups, it might make sense to have Isaiah come off the bench. If you go back to Crowder and Jarebko, who knows? Yeah. So I don't know. I literally have no idea how they'll handle that when Smart comes back.
It's so interesting because now all of a sudden, either guy starts to make sense. It used to be that we needed you needed Avery Bradley in the starting lineup because of his defense, which I think is still the case, but offensively, Avery has shown that he can be the guy on that second unit. And if you use Isaiah Thomas the right way, he can work in the starting lineup. Now, I know that flies in the face of the first probably five episodes of the show where I've been dying to get Isaiah Thomas on the bench. I'd still like that, but part of me thinks that Avery Bradley, as the guy who is the featured guard off of the bench, like Avery Bradley is the featured offensive player, that helps him a lot. And Thomas, with Marcus Smart and everybody else, he can kind of figure it out. I don't know. It's so hard to say. Like, none of the things that I used to say about Thomas changes. I still think he thrives in those lineups where there's a lot of floor spacing and he can go attack with the with those floor spacers. But
yeah, I think it's kind of a quiet drop. His efficiency has dropped a bit since last season. He's not getting to the line as much. And I think that is partially because he's playing with the starters. He's playing with two traditional big men more often.
So,
but still, he's really good in that starting lineup. It's not like he's,
it's not right.
Yeah. So,
he's better off the bench.
I still think yes, he's better off the bench, but I'm not sure it makes the team better to have him off the bench. So it's an interesting decision Stevens will have once Smart does come back. It'll really, really, really be. I don't know if it's a tough decision for him. Maybe he has an idea in his head. He thinks he's got it ready to go. Maybe he'll just say, Avery, you're coming off the bench. Well, but all those guys are capable of starting. Every single one of them.
Here's the burning question on Twitter from Benjamin Davis. Would we think differently of Avery Bradley if he had James Harden's beard?
As long as he didn't play defense like James Harden, I think we would still think the same of him.
James Harden. I don't know. I feel like James Harden is one of the most disappointing players in the league this year. Considering what he should be and was an MVP candidate and what he is, although, I don't know. I've never been all in on Harden. And I think this year has been a very down year for Harden. But I don't want to go too crazy.
What's crazy, it's crazy to think that, what was it, 6-7 months ago, there was a legitimate MVP debate between him and Steph Curry.
Yeah.
And then, legitimate MVP debate.
They have both gone in opposite directions.
Yes.
Steph Curry has been so godlike, it's ridiculous. And James Harden got Kevin McHale fired.
Will you admit now that Stephen Curry is a better shooter than Larry Bird ever was?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, it doesn't change what Larry Bird was and how great Larry Bird was, but as a pure shooter, dude, who's it? Tom Haberstroh put out the tweet a few days ago that Larry Bird in the 86-87 season broke his own NBA record for 90 three-point makes in a season. 90 in a season. And Steph Curry had like 110 or 20 in 20 games. Like he had whatever the number was, well over 100 in 20 games. That's insanity. That shows where the game is. And look, I'm going to throw this out there right now. I've been toying around with this as a post, and I don't want to put you completely on the spot, although I'm putting you completely on the spot right now.
Uh-oh.
I have been wondering, what if we rethought the all-time team? Like when you sit there and you say, your 15 best players, your starting five, and your 10 players on your bench, all time in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the typical answer is something like Magic, Jordan, Bird, Duncan, Russell. Something in that range. You can throw in a couple of different players in different spots, but that's kind of like your starting five.
Yeah.
But what if we rethought that for today's pace and space, up and down, three-point heavy, threes or dunks, spread the floor type of NBA. How would that change?
Well, the interesting part of it is you think back, Larry Bird never really understood how much of a weapon the three-pointer could be. And if he was in today's game, he'd be taking those shots from the trainer's lap routinely. You know, that would be like his regular thing. So to really even think about that is to – you have to imagine what those players might have been like with today's mentality, where guys like Chris Humphreys suddenly are being three-point shooters.
Right.
And like the league is crazy right now. The league, like when you look around at the guys – who are trying to shoot three-pointers, it's like...
Amir Johnson!
Amir, he shoots like 40%. It takes him 30 minutes to get off.
He could start right now, and he wouldn't actually release the ball until 3 minutes into the next game. He's just got a slow release. But yeah, you're right. Everybody, like anybody can go in there and say, look, you got to take some threes. So that's my point. So if you threw together, you went through the entire history of the NBA and you wanted to put together a starting five, let's just
think of Bird as a stretch four.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. That's exactly what I'm thinking.
That would be scary.
What if you started all time? I would put Steph Curry. Steph Curry as my point guard. Jordan, because he transcends everything.
Two. Plus imagine him without all the hand check rules and stuff like that.
Yes. Goodness. I would put LeBron at the three, Bird at the four, and then the big question is who's your five?
I might throw Shaq in there.
Really? I would say I would go like
I might
like
throw
Garnett.
Shaq because – what we've seen from Pace and Space is that out of your big guys, you don't necessarily need – Garnett would be a good choice, but you don't necessarily need that big guy who – dominates in the low post. If you have the pick and roll guy,
yes,
and just have Shaq rolling down the middle with Stephen Curry and Larry Bird,
right,
and Michael. I mean, it's a fun question.
But think about trotting out a starting lineup of Curry, Jordan, LeBron, Bird as your stretch four, and Garnett as your five. A guy who could play the post and who could think about Garnett in his prime Minnesota years, he used to go out and stretch the floor. He used to be a three-point threat. Now, he never really shot more than like low 30s, but he took them, and you don't even need your center to take them necessarily. He's still a pick and pop guy and a threat to stretch the floor out to 15, 17 feet. But defensively that unit, Garnett anchoring that defense, Bird, underrated defender, hell of a rebounder, and you've got LeBron and Jordan defending, and Steph Curry's no slouch. He's no slouch. He participates defensively, but that unit defensively is still badass. In today's NBA, throwing that starting five out there, I can't imagine the havoc. But I think that's a fun conversation to rethink the all-time NBA team with today's three-point heavy pace and space and how that would change things.
I like that. That's a good – that's maybe your best question you've had in the history of the podcast. That is a strong question right there. I like that question.
All right. So maybe we should just end it there because go out on top, George Costanza. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Not in the lineup, Derek Lee.
Not Derek Lee, not a basketball player, even as much as I want to throw him out there. Let's get back to a Twitter question. Back to Avery Bradley with his recent hot streak. This comes from Celtic Welsh. With his recent hot streak and movable contract, is Avery Bradley the Celtics' most attractive trade piece? So we're going to move into some talk about moving guys.
I love, as soon as guys have a good month, it's like, trade him.
Move.
Trade him.
Sell high. But Wick came out and said that he would prefer to trade the Celtics, the Nets pick.
Yeah, although he said for like a transformative guy.
Of course.
It wasn't like we're just going to throw it out there.
But
he's like, if we could find another Kevin Garnett, like that'd be awesome.
Sure. But he is very open to trading that pick. So, of course, that part of me really thinks that he said that kind of to solicit offers from other teams to say, hey, by the way, everybody else, we're open for business. We're entering into that middle of December deadline where recently signed guys signed in the offseason can be traded. So we're going to start hearing some of those rumors in the next few weeks. But since Wick brought it up and we've got this question, who is the most attractive trade piece on the Boston Celtics besides, you know, an actual player that's not a random Nets draft pick in the future?
Gotta be Isaiah Thomas or Marcus Smart, right?
I mean, I would think so. I would think Isaiah Thomas, he's got...
By the way, while we're talking about this, they have built a top three defense.
Yes.
That is built around Jay Crowder, Marcus Smart, and Avery Bradley. And they'll have those guys under contract for like $20 million combined for this season, next year, and the year after that. And then they'll have Isaiah Thomas on top of that for $7 million a year. Like, it's crazy in this cap era, the deals that they have gotten on those guys.
So,
and that makes building the rest of the roster so much easier because they have four perimeter contributors, one scorer, three great defenders under such legitimate team-friendly deals.
Let's look at Jay Crowder's deal for just a moment because this is amazing to me. So they signed Crowder to this big extension. So he's making, what, like $6.7 million this year. He actually gets a pay cut next year. He makes $400,000 a year less next year. The following year, he makes what he makes this year. So in two seasons, he makes exactly what he makes this year. And then he's under contract for two more seasons for like 7.3 and 7.8. So it takes him three seasons from now to actually get a raise. That is mind-blowing, the type of contract that Ainge got him to sign. Who signs that kind of deal?
Yeah, and $7 million per season over 5 years for a starting small forward, a legitimate starting small forward who can guard anyone, who can shift over to the four. It's
and mind
that
you,
deal. When he signed that deal, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like seven. And now it looks even better because he's taken a step forward. I think he's better at small forward this year than he was last year. And I mean, he's just the type of player you want on your team. He's a heart and soul. He never backs down from anybody. He's fearless. He's absolutely the type of competitor you want. And he gets better and better. And he's under contract for 5 years at a team-friendly deal when he should be improving and coming into his prime at some point within the next 3 or 4 years. Who knows? It's crazy. That deal, to me, was robbery from the time they signed it. And it's that's going to be a great, great deal, I think, through the life of it.
He doesn't get a raise for three seasons. Meanwhile, that salary cap keeps going up by like $20 million a year.
Yeah.
So he is getting, by the time he gets to that $7.3 million, the percentage of the cap that he takes drops by like 15% or something crazy. Meanwhile, remember when people were upset about the Avery Bradley deal? How much of a bargain is that deal right now?
Yeah.
People are pissed off about the Bradley signing.
You look at the landscape of the NBA and Terrence Ross. Terrence freaking Ross signed an $11 million a year deal. And meanwhile, the Celtics have Avery Bradley for $8 million, Jay Crowder for $7 million, Isaiah Thomas for $7 million. Marcus Smart on his rookie contract. Like, those four guys are all better than Terrence Ross and all making significantly less. And they'll be around for a while at those prices. And it's That's really helpful when you're trying to build a team.
Significant players, good role players, and then you move forward with good trade value in your draft picks and other pieces. Look, Olynyk, Sullinger, whomever, one of those guys is probably going to go in a deal. And maybe some of the guys we've talked about, maybe they're part of why their deals are so good is that makes them really, really attractive. Who wouldn't want a Jay Crowder at that price? Now, of course, we would hope to get back the superstar player, and you say, well, we give up Crowder, but we got name your player. And I'm not going to name a player because as soon as I do, you're going to get on me and be like, oh, look at John saying, oh, he's saying trade Jay Crowder for Kevin Durant, blah, blah, blah. No, like a superstar player, star player that, of course, you're going to have to give up some things that you like, but these guys are all on very attractive deals. So it's Danny Ainge has done everything he can from the Celtics perspective to set the Celtics up to improve and make those deals. And if they can't, if other teams aren't willing to participate, that's the luck of the draw. If Jordan really wants Kaminsky and won't be smart and trade away that pick for four draft picks, what can you do? If somebody wants to be an idiot, then he's going to be an idiot, and that's not Ainge's fault. All Ainge can do is put the Celtics in a position to do the right thing, and if other people aren't willing to do the right thing, that's not Ainge's fault. He can only do so much.
Yeah, I think he'll be operating from a position of better power in this draft because they will have the Nets pick. They'll have the Mavericks pick. They'll have their own pick. So they'll have, I think, more powerful trade pieces this summer than they did last year when they tried to so hard to get Justice Winslow. Obviously, teams can get a little attached to their draft pick on draft night, as Ainge saw.
Right. Draft night is the worst night to trade draft picks. You can't trade draft picks, future draft picks on draft night. That's the one night of the year you can't do it.
Yeah, because the guys get, teams get so excited about the players that they're going to draft and the potential of the guys that they've been looking at for so many months. And finally, it's their night to add a strong piece. And it's tough to forego that to have picks in the future. Although that night I was talking to someone in the Celtics organization and they told me what they had offered for Charlotte and to Charlotte. And he's like, oh my God. He's like, I cannot believe they said no. He's like, really? I can't believe we even offered it. he's like, it got to a point where we were just throwing so much on there that we weren't sure whether it was a good deal for us. And, you know, seeing Justice Winslow in person the other night, he's fun to watch, isn't he?
Oh my God.
He's a Brad Stevens type of guy,
oh
too.
Oh, my God. He's so fun. It makes sense. Like, he's – Danny Ainge is not immune to falling in love with a player, and Justice Winslow is proof of that. And I can see why Danny Ainge was like, I'll give up. I'll do whatever I can to get this guy. He's a lot of fun. That kid is really good, and he's – Miami's going to be in a good position for a long time with him, but it gets to a point right now where I'm almost willing to stop wearing Jordans and start wearing like Adidas out of protest. I can understand not trading that pick. If you're going to pick Winslow yourself.
Yeah, that's a thing. Like to turn that down.
To turn it down and draft Kaminsky?
Frank Kaminsky?
What the hell,
Frank
man?
Kaminsky? And I don't even know. Like, the Celtics were offering so much for that pick. So much. That in the end, it might not be worth it. Like, they might be better off, as good as Justice Winslow is, as good as he will be.
Sure.
They might be better off that Jordan said no and fell in love with Frank freaking Kaminsky.
God. I have no ill will towards the Hornets, but man, if any team deserves to have everything blow up in their face, when you have the opportunity to get all of those picks, was it 4 number one picks?
Yep.
And it's not like they took Winslow. They said, oh, you want to trade into this pick? You're giving us all of this so you could draft Winslow? Is that what you want? Well, screw you. And not only are we going to not take all of your stuff, we're not even going to draft the guy you want. So double screw you. Like that, it seems like almost petty. Like it doesn't even make sense to me.
Hey, Kaminsky's he's averaging 4.8 points per game though. So let's move on before you start ranting and raving again. I can see you scratching your eyeball. You're worked up right now. You're about to start calling Michael Jordan by the wrong name, like Mark Jordan.
Mark Jordan. Do you think he'll take Derek Lee from us?
That would be nice of him.
Let's go back. I want to address some of the comments that were made after the Orlando game, because Orlando was a very disappointing game where the effort was very low. And after that game, Crowder made some interesting comments about the rotations, and there was some griping. So we've talked about Derek. God damn it. David Lee. David Lee. What is with me? David Lee wants 20 to 25 minutes a game. And he's been griping about the minutes. And Jay Crowder had those comments after Orlando. But then in the Miami game, it seemed like things kind of, some of those guys that were getting minutes on the bench, kind of they kind of were paired back, and the starters got a little bit more time. I just want to get this sense of how much of this griping over minutes is a thing that permeates the locker room, and that's not a David Lee issue. Does it go beyond Lee? Are there other guys who are worried about, or not worried about, but kind of griping about the way they're being used?
Well, I'm sure Tyler Zeller is not happy. He was a starter on a playoff team last year. Now he plays garbage time. But after practice today, the team was all leaving. The first bus left, the second bus left, and Coach Stevens called out to the guys on the court, you know, guys, second bus is leaving. Tyler said, is it all right if I stay and shoot? and Steven said, yeah, sure. And Jay Larinaga, the assistant coach, agreed to stay with him and shoot and walk back to the hotel. So Tyler Zeller is keeping a positive attitude. He, at least outwardly, and from that moment, it looks like he's okay. David Lee, same thing. Like, he's frustrated with the minutes. It hasn't become an issue yet. Jay Crowder, that was weird. Because if one guy was going to complain about minutes, the last guy you'd ever suspect it would be Crowder.
Right.
Because he's always in there. He plays as many minutes as just about anyone. He is used all over the court. And
but refresh
so that
memory,
was weird.
Was that the game where he didn't start the second half?
No, that was the Philadelphia game. And I think he liked that because he loves playing four. And the reason he didn't start the second half was so that he could come in and play four in small ball lineups.
Right, right. Okay.
So to me, first of all, Jay Crowder is a really honest guy, especially after a game. Like when he gets his adrenaline pumping, he will say anything. I mean, literally 2 weeks into his tenure with the Celtics, he called out Stevens for not holding guys accountable enough. He called out players for not holding themselves accountable enough. Last night after the final play, he's like, yeah, I'm going to ask Brad if we could practice that more often because I really don't think he's had us practice that enough. He said, like, the rotation thing, he's just completely honest.
He just
after
throws
the game.
It out there.
Yeah, and it's not that he's – it's like an issue. It's something where he says it and it's over, and the next game he's like completely happy. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But so he's just like one of those guys. He gets it off his chest and that's it. So I don't think that the rotation is a real issue yet. I think it – that was the one thing from the start of the season – you knew at some point of the season, like, there was going to be some griping about it.
Yeah.
Because there's just too many solid players for it not to become an issue at some point. So, yeah, I mean, there's little grumblings. It's no big deal yet. We'll see if it becomes one.
Yes.
You know, when Marcus Smart comes back, obviously that's 30 more minutes, 30 less minutes for everybody else to have. So we'll see. And then, you know, last year, I think this is a good point of reference. Last year, when things got really bad, and things got really bad, people forget about this because later came the rush into the playoffs. For a span, when they had Jameer Nelson, when they had Brandon Wright, when they still had Jeff Green, that locker room was like really, really upset. Even Brandon Bass, who never, ever, ever complains, was complaining about playing time. Brandon Wright, same thing. Jameer Nelson was like,
yes, I remember Jameer like Nelson.
That was ugly. And you know what Ainge did? He traded Brandon Wright. He traded Jameer Nelson. I don't think it really mattered to Ainge what he got back for those guys. He mostly just wanted to get rid of them and make sure that the rotation was back to what it should be. So I think that's a good point of reference because Ainge isn't obviously afraid to make moves like that if he has to. Right now, I don't think it's anywhere near that point where he has to. I think team is still in good spirits for the most part. But yeah, when Smart comes back, things could get a little more interesting, and especially if Hunter starts to play well. You know, there will be decisions that Stevens has to make, and some guy like David Lee. And if David Lee's minutes do get cut, then that situation might go from like, okay, this is just harmless talk about his minutes,
yeah,
to now this guy is 32 and it's an issue. Because remember Keith Bogans? Like, Keith Bogans was the perfect teammate. Everyone called him the perfect teammate. Like, he was the best veteran leader to have around until the moment when he flipped out because he wasn't getting enough minutes from the Celtics. That could be really hard for a guy who's played his entire life to suddenly be told you're not good enough to play in the rotation.
Right. Especially when it's a contract year. Going back to David Lee's contract that's up at the end of the year. So I've always thought Lee was the guy that could be the odd man out. I've always thought that he's the guy that would gripe the most because he's got the most to lose. When you think about who has things to lose on this team, he's the guy. He's up for his deal. He wants his money. And if he doesn't have the opportunity to prove that he can play, then he's the guy that's going to sit there and say, wait a minute, I need time. I need to play. So it's going to be really interesting because I think the Celtics are more effective without him on the floor. So
let me ask you this question. If you could go back and stop that trade, David Lee for Gerald Wallace.
No, I won't do it.
Would you do it?
I would not stop that trade because the worst case scenario is you just send him home like Bogans. That's the worst case scenario. You got out of that contract, that Wallace contract, 1 year earlier. So I think the Celtics are better off without him on the floor.
Okay, I'll add this. Some there was at least a faction of the Celtics organization that wanted to stretch Wallace's contract and go after another free agent, whether it be like Damari Carroll or somebody also last season.
That was my preferred. That would have been my preferred path.
Yeah, rather than go after David Lee.
I would have. Yes, yes. If you're telling me the choice was to stretch Wallace, I would have done that in a heartbeat. Rather than trade for Lee. Absolutely done. Yeah, because, look, and I don't know if Ainge is averse to dead money on the cap, but they weren't so strung out on the cap where it mattered. And going forward, it didn't really hinder any of the deals that they could have potentially done. But, you know, it would have been like 3.3333 million, right, on the cap if he had been stretched for 3 years.
Yeah, I forget the exact number.
Something like that. I know you get like 1 year plus twice the whatever it is. I think it would have been like 3 point something million that was dead money on the cap for the next 3 years, which I would have been fine with considering where the cap was going. It wouldn't have been an issue. But looking at it from Ainge's perspective, you lose if you trading for Lee. You get out of that deal 1 year sooner. You gain a potential trade asset, and with all of the deals that he has pulled off, you could just either cut him or send him home or trade him for a second round pick and get something. So I would not have stopped that deal considering that they chose not to stretch him, but I would have stretched him before doing that deal. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
To answer your question?
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have made the deal even if you were just keeping Wallace, because Wallace wasn't going to hurt anything. Wallace was absolutely harmless. He didn't care that he didn't play. He was a good guy to have around. Lee, I think he's a good guy to have around. He seems like a good guy to have around. Everyone's thought
until
he's a good guy to have around.
Until he starts bitching about his minutes.
Yeah, it's like when guys start talking about minutes in the press, you always wonder, like, why? Why not just have a quiet conversation with Brad Stevens about it and continue on and do whatever you can in whatever role your coach thinks you should play to help the team? That always bugs me. Like, keep it in-house.
Me too.
Keep it in-house. And granted, a lot of the time, it's a reporter saying, are you happy with your minutes? And the guy just being honest.
Sure.
But you got to know, like, people are going to look at those comments and construe them, this guy's unhappy. And you
Nobody
have to...
Nobody ever considers the question. Ever.
Ever. Ever. And it's too bad sometimes, because sometimes questions are so misleading or leading that they walk someone right into a quote. But who knows what the questions were to David Lee? But he has to know how that, I mean, he's been in the league many years. He knows how that was going to read, and he went ahead and said it anyway. So I don't think you can really blame the question there, because he knew.
Of course.
He had to know.
No, of course. No, that makes sense. Yeah. But, I mean, still, the fact is that I'll say it because I can. I'm not in that locker room every day. Some guys ask questions that are merely geared towards getting the quote they need to get the piece in before the deadline. This is how it goes. You do not have to respond. It's just how it is. I get it, and people should know that that's part of how some guys do their job. I'm not even going to say who it is. I don't know exactly who it is, but some guys do that. And it may not even be one of the Celtics writers, but there are writers out there that ask questions because they need a quote to fill spots, and that's what it is. But players need to understand that when questions lead a certain way, they can't necessarily take the bait and answer, I guess for lack of a better term, truthfully, because what ends up happening is you're the guy that looks like the jerk. And bloggers like me don't sit there and say, huh, I wonder what the question was. All they hear is, well, you know, the rotations aren't what we thought they were, and it's a little frustrating. And I sit there
Well, hold on. The Jay Crowder thing, he came out of left field with that. That was not the question. Like, he just came out of nowhere. Someone had asked a completely different question. And at the end of the answer, he's like, and by the way, these rotations need to change. So that was not the case with Jay Crowder.
It doesn't take away from my overall point.
Yes. That's
not always the case. How many guys ever come out of left field with quotes like that? Very often it's a leading question. But regardless, a little off topic. We'll just leave that alone. It just is what it is. I personally didn't like what Crowder said. It sounded like an excuse. It sounded like we played like crap. We didn't try. And, oh, by the way, we didn't like the rotations. So, you know, it just sounded very excusey. But then they came out against Miami, Sacramento, and San Antonio, and they didn't beat the Spurs. But I thought the Spurs game was a really good effort. The Celtics played fairly well. They made some mistakes, but
yeah. The
mistakes they made, you're playing the Spurs, you're going to make mistakes.
And the thing was, the Spurs played well.
Yeah.
And they still had a chance to beat the Spurs. It wasn't like this was like the Spurs operating with their B or C game. The Spurs were firing. Yeah. They were firing. They were playing great basketball. And Boston stuck around. And if Avery Bradley's shot from the corner goes down, they might have beat the Spurs in San Antonio.
They might have. I wrote it in the morning dump today. That play is very indicative of where the Celtics are and where the Spurs are. Because earlier in the game, so that play was with 10 seconds left on the clock. A few plays before, San Antonio ran this play where Parker brings it up. Duncan's on the low post. Ginobili kind of uses like a soft pick and kind of runs up, curls around Duncan and kind of comes up the lane, and Duncan goes off to the wing. Parker passes it to Duncan, and Evan Turner is guarding Ginobili, and he just kind of lapses for a second and loses sight of Ginobili for a second. And Ginobili plants at the free throw line, cuts back door. Duncan finds him immediately. Boom, layup. Like, precision, awesome, simple, but perfect. Fast forward to that play where Bradley had that three. It was a legitimate open three. But he had that quote after the game where he's like, I really didn't know what was going on, and I heard the guy say shoot it, so I shot it. No precision at all. He kind of stumbled into that shot. Now, it was a shot that could have gone in. It was a good shot. It wasn't forced. But there was no precision. There was none of that stuff. They kind of got a good shot because it just happened that way. But when you saw Thomas go down the lane and dribble off to the left, you saw Bradley kind of take two steps and then say, oh crap, here comes Isaiah, I'm going to take a couple of steps back, and he got the ball and he had an open shot. There wasn't a play there. There wasn't that kind of glance, be like, I see you, you see me, cut back door, boom, here's the layup. So it's just indicative of the Celtics needing to be just hustle, the KG gritting balls, go, you know, work your butts off, and hopefully good things happen, you capitalize, versus the Spurs who are like, okay, no problem. We're, you know, it's a two-point game. We're just going to execute our thing, and here's a play. And we run the play, and here's our layup, and we're going to go back on defense. Do-do-do-do-do. We're the Spurs. We're awesome. And it's all calm. Like, the chaos around them doesn't affect them at all, not in the least bit. The Celtics, we've seen them in any of these close games, they get so tight, they make so many mistakes, they're not sure what to do, and that's very indicative of the next step the Celtics need to take. Whether it's via superstar or whatever it is, they just need to get to that point where they calm down in those tight moments and they just execute something and get a good shot by design rather than by accident.
I will say this, though. They outscored the Spurs 26-14 in the last 7 minutes. Like, their execution, for the most part, was really, really good. I know exactly what you're saying on the play in question, where Isaiah Thomas kind of over-dribbled. He had nowhere to go. Bradley kind of rushed the shot from the corner. And, like Isaiah before that had kind of like run into Bradley. There wasn't good spacing. That wasn't a great play. But for the most part, I mean, down the stretch, they picked apart San Antonio and they shut San Antonio down. Ginobili had a few awesome plays, throwback plays. But for the most part, they really did a good job. Greg Popovich said after the game, he's like, we can really learn from this game because they out-executed us in the fourth quarter when it mattered. And that was like, whoa. Popovich, by the way, his love affair with Stevens.
It's awesome. I love it.
It just always goes on. Every game they play, I'm like, at this point, it's kind of like a boring storyline because it just happens every time.
Not
but
to me, though.
But every time, it's like he says something more and more glowing of Stevens. And Stevens says something more and more glowing about Popovich. Those two guys like have so much respect for the way they run each other's programs. It's really neat to hear those guys talk about each other.
It's so funny because you see them at the end of the game, and that's where you really can get a good sense. Some games, Brad points and says, hey, okay, nice game, see ya, and walks off. Some games he'll walk over and kind of like shake a hand, like nice one. Like that's a little more. With Pop, they spent like 5 minutes at half court pointing and like, so we did blah, blah, blah. That was pretty good how you did that. Yeah, I did this too. And that was pretty awesome how you did that. Hey, man, you want to get a dinner? Here's my number again. Blah, blah, blah. Like they had like this big conversation. These guys love each other. And to me, I always bring it up as often as I can, and people might be sick of it, but the fact that Greg Popovich, who I hold in a higher regard than any coach besides Red Auerbach, more than Phil Jackson, more than anybody else, personally, I think Pop is the second best NBA coach of all time. Forget Jackson's rings. I don't care about all those rings. Because I think that those were, he cherry-picked situations. The fact that Popovich has done this with the one team and has had this sustained level of success, the way he's done it, I hold him in a very high regard. And the fact that he holds Brad Stevens in a high regard makes me feel amazing about what we have in Boston with Brad Stevens.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need Greg Popovich to tell us that Stevens is
we don't, but it's all great that
coach.
He does.
But I think they approach basketball, I think, in similar ways, where they both. I thought. Let me dig up this quote from Stevens yesterday, because I thought this was kind of the perfect quote for what he wants out of his team. Someone asked him, "Do you want the Celtics to take on your personality like the Spurs have with Greg Popovich's?" And Popovich is kind of unassuming, win a game, just walk to the next one. Don't strut, do whatever, just take care of your business. Steven said, I don't care whose personality we take on. I don't care. I would say Pop would feel the same way. But I do think you play your best, you handle it well, win or lose, and you move on. I think that's what they've done so well. They're very prideful. They play with an exceptional confidence, but they also play with humility. That's something that stands out. You can't be this consistent for this long and not have that combination. That to me was like the perfect quote about what Stevens wants to build with the Celtics. He wants guys that will compete their butts off, that will be confident as all heck, and that will accept coaching and want to get better no matter how much success or failure they have. And Popovich has done that in San Antonio.
Yep.
And that's what Stevens wants to build in Boston.
I can't agree anymore. Like I love how Popovich is – look, Popovich is basically, here's the truth as I see it. If you don't like it, tough. Now, he will accept from his players things that they see and take the things that they – you know, he'll say – I see blah, blah, blah. And they'll say, well, I see this. And they have a good, honest conversation. It's not that he'll say, this is my way or no way. He'll say, here is the truth. And if a player says, but I see X, Y, Z, and he didn't see it, then he will accept that and say, okay, let's work this in. Like, he's not a jerk about being a professional. Like, everybody that he coaches, those guys, you see things on the floor. When you're a great player, you see things that a coach can't see, and they all work together. It's a team. And I think that Stevens is accepting of things. When players see things, a good coach will take the things that they see, if it's legit, and work it in. So I don't want to gush. I'm very happy that Stevens has this guy as a role model. It could be. There's no better role model that a guy could have. We have gone way long. I like today's show. A lot of passion. A lot of good stuff. We should wrap it up to keep it in that hour time frame. So, Jay, final words?
It's been real, John. It's been real. Derek Lee
needs to sit. I don't know why I got on this Derek Lee thing.
The best was when you just slipped it in after the first time.
I don't know why.
You were dead serious, 100% thought you had said David Lee, and just slipped in the second Derek Lee. I think you slipped in the third, too. That was
probably. I was going to do a fourth.
We have christened Derek Lee as the big man who should lose minutes when the Celtics decide to go small. That's it. Derek Lee.
Yeah. So, I guess. For Joe King, I'm Jeff Corrales. We'll see you next week on the Raining Jays podcast.
Fashion hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and oldnavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.